culture to politics. Your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, a day after a great and substantial and meaningful and landmark decision. We are being told that this is one of the most important, one of the most surprising, one of the most dramatic court decisions in history, finding Officer Derek Chauvin guilty on all three counts on which he was charged. I think there is a great national sense of relief. The president spoke last night. He was preceded by the vice president of the United States. But there is a deep, deep question to be asked here. And that question has to do with what the president said, what the vice president said, what Speaker Pelosi said, what virtually everyone who was asked about this said. I was reading down the list of comments that were put together, assembled by CNN. About as mainstream in mainstream media as you can get. And those comments all basically said the same thing. They said, this is a great sign of progress, but there's more to be done. The story isn't over. We can do even better. We must continue to pursue justice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, all of that is undeniably true. I do think it is an enormously good thing for the country that a transparently and inarguably guilty police officer was found guilty of causing unnecessarily the death of George Floyd. Okay, we got that. One down and many more to go. That was a comment by Van Jones that got a lot of commentary and a lot of continuity and resonated with many people. The problem right now is when you say many more to go, It unfocuses us on the real problems of inequality, the real problems of division, the real problems of racism that, yes, still exist. Why do I say that? Because if you are talking about the suffering in the black community, that suffering is highlighted not only by the death of George Floyd, but the life of George Floyd. Because even before the moment of his death last year, George Floyd had a difficult life and one that was marked by all kinds of suffering, largely relating to a profound curse on the black community and on the entire American community, which is the curse of drugs and drug addiction. And just to put this in perspective, if you want to talk about the number of people who die every year, from drug overdoses, opioid overdoses alone, 7,300 black people died of opioid overdoses in the last year for which the CDC has official numbers. It will be 2019. It's only gotten worse. 36,000 white people, 7,300 black people, 5,264 Hispanic people. How many black people died at the hands of cops? The estimate, and this based on the Washington Post and every other source researching it, the estimate for last year is somewhere, depending on how you classify unarmed, somewhere between 15 and 20. We are not talking about 15 and 20,000. We're not talking about 1,500. We're talking about 15 individuals. That's 15 too many. No one should ever die like George Floyd died. But no one should ever live like George Floyd lived. In and out of jail. He was sentenced for 8 different crimes, and they were real crimes. This was not having a air freshener dangling, and that wasn't the problem for Dante Wright either. It wasn't really the air freshener. The problem was an outstanding warrant for aggravated robbery, attempted aggravated robbery. And all of these problems of criminality and gang violence and brutality, The kind of brutality that saw a 2-year-old girl here in Seattle severely wounded in a shooting that has still unexplained. They still don't have any suspects. She just got out of the hospital, and thank God it looks like the two-year-old is going to survive. But it happens literally every day in Chicago or in Philadelphia or in St. Louis or in Baltimore, somewhere around the country. This is not a problem caused by police. This is a problem that only police can help to solve. How else do you do it, for goodness sake? And that's why the stupidity here, the idea that, oh, great, now we are putting this cop who deserves to go to jail. He unquestionably deserves to go to jail for a long, long time. They'll start the sentencing process right away. Probably the sentence won't be declared or announced until about, 8 weeks from now. It'll be a while. But meanwhile, he's back in jail. They revoked his bail. They put handcuffs on him. He went back to jail. He was out in $1 million bail, was Derek Chauvin. But given that and that difficulty, how does this address any of the real problems, the deepest problems that are afflicting the black community in this country? And by the way, in terms of the addiction overdoses, it's not just the overdoses. It's what it does to your life. Look at George Floyd's history. I mean, it is so sad that he died, but it was also sad that on the day of his death, he had, according to his own declaration, it's on some of the tapes, eaten a whole lot of drugs. He had fentanyl and he had methamphetamines in his system on the day of his death. Now, that all goes along with the numbers I gave you of over 7,000 black people, mostly black males, of course, who died of overdoses the most recent year. There is a number from the CDC. Overdose deaths have been going up dramatically. Between 2013 and 2017, they went up ninefold for white people. 900%. For Hispanics, they went up 12-fold. For black people, they went up 18-fold. This is a real tragedy. It is a real crime. This is the ongoing murder every day, the murder of human hopes, the murder of families, the murder of neighborhoods. It is a desecration, and it is wrong. That is what we ought to be focused on. Is dealing with the crime, not crimes by police officers. Those two, if a police officer commits a crime, yes, he should be held to a higher standard or at least the same standard, sure. But the idea is that right now with our focus on police violence, what we are doing is we are focusing on and criticizing and warring against the one force in society that can actually protect us against the deeper problems, which is better policing, where we had made tremendous progress between 1980 and about 2005, actually at least until 2015. Great progress in murder rates and more. And at the same time, some of these people in the streets who are screaming and hollering and demonstrating and saying this is only the beginning, they're the same people who want legalized drugs. In other words, we are now supporting the force that is destroying neighborhoods and communities and families at the same time that we are trying to immobilize and undermine and cripple the one force that could actually improve life in this great country. A little bit later in the show, we'll be talking to Noah Rothman of Commentary Magazine. He's just written a fascinating piece and an important one called The Problem with the Phrase Systemic Racism. We'll also hear a little bit about one of the leading black conservatives, Glenn Lowry, has to say about this situation. And we'll be talking about Nancy Pelosi's idiotic comments. That and more coming up on The MedVed Show.
1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show. Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com.
And on the Michael Medved Show, there have been all kinds of reactions, of course, all across the political spectrum about the conviction of Derek Chauvin. What I have not heard is anyone suggesting that the a conviction is monumentally unfair. How could you? It would be impossible to make that case. And I was asked the question yesterday when we were talking about this, is what should Derek Chauvin have done differently? And the answer is very obvious. And I think this is what the jury determined. It's what the prosecution argued. It's what is self-evident. What Derek Chauvin should have done differently is to, once there had been a cessation of George Floyd's attempts to resist arrest, once he was lying on his face against the ground, and he had asked to be taken down to the ground. And when he was taken down to the ground, and the knee was already on his neck, and his handcuffs were already on, and he was lying on his face, and he basically was no longer resisting arrest, then at that point, you react like a human being. And when the guy is saying, "I can't breathe," you take it seriously. He was not armed. He was handcuffed. He was resisting arrest. And see, part of the problem here, and Eric Nelson, the defender, the defense attorney, who I think generally was hapless in defending Derek Chauvin, but it's a very, very tough defense to make. He said one thing that I think is valid, which is that the crowd that was surrounding this entire scene as it unfolded, and it didn't unfold in just 9 minutes and 29 seconds, because there was struggle before then. They had put him in the police car. You can see the police car rocking back and forth. George Floyd was fighting with the other officers. He clearly was, as, by the way, Derek Chauvin acknowledged after they took him away in an ambulance, and he was already dead, unfortunately. He was having a medical episode, and there was a huge crowd around him. And the crowd, by hollering and screaming, I think made it less likely, not more likely, that Derek Chauvin does the right thing and lets the man stand up and breathe. Or at least sit up and breathe. Or at least doesn't proceed to kill him with depraved indifference to human life, which was part of the basis of the verdict. But there are a lot of tone-deaf things that people have said, it seems to me, in response to this verdict. I hope I'm not contributing to that. If you think I am, you can give us a call, 1-800-955-1776. Does bring us to our tweet of the day.
Turn the page now to the internet.
I mean, wow, what a great, smart tweet.
Change his password so he no longer has access to his Twitter feed.
Did you send the tweet?
I did not send that tweet. My system was hacked. I was pranked.
Donald Trump hasn't tweeted at us once, and I'm starting to get worried about him.
So we have a new tweet.
All right.
Can I do the honors?
Stand by. Tweet alert.
Okay, the tweet of the day, which is highly controversial, and they're going to have to apologize, of course, is from the Las Vegas Raiders. And the Las Vegas Raiders were formerly the Oakland Raiders. And this is from their verified account. They simply say, "I can breathe." 4/20/21. Now, I don't know if this is a reference to the fact that 4/20 yesterday is also Marijuana Day. It's Getting High Day. It's supposed to be a festival for marijuana. I can breathe. I don't think it's a reference to that. It's also Hitler's birthday, of course, the 20th. And look, I can breathe. The Las Vegas Raiders did not make a positive impression building their audience. And again, the politicization of American sports is really one of the unnecessary and egregious excesses that is part of this moment in our history. Another part of this moment in our history, and a big part, is played by the Speaker of the House. She's third in line to the presidency. And Nancy Pelosi expressed thanks yesterday, not to the jury. I think the jury deserves thanks. Was actually appropriate. The president last night in his remarks, we'll hear some of his remarks in a moment, but the president thanked the jury. Sure, the jury appears to have done a very capable, fair, up-the-middle, decent job, just like Judge Peter Cahill did. And they deserve all the praise imaginable. The American criminal justice system deserves a great deal of praise for the way that this has been handled. And good on them. But Nancy Pelosi, she thanks George Floyd. Now, feeling pity for George Floyd, feeling compassion for his family, sure. But listen to this. This is the Speaker of the House.
Thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice, for being there to call out to your mom. How heartbreaking was that? Call out for your mom. I can't breathe. But because of you and because of thousands, millions of people around the world who came out for justice, your name will always be synonymous with justice.
Okay, think about that. She said earlier in these same remarks to her House colleagues, she said earlier, not just your name will be synonymous with justice, she said your name will be synonymous with justice and dignity. And again, the story of George Floyd is not an inspiring story of martyrdom. It's a story of dysfunction, of personal tragedy, of a whole series of terrible choices that were made before that particular day. Now, this does not mean that George Floyd in any way deserved what happened to him. He didn't deserve it. But what it does mean is that it's a terrible mistake if we now elevate George Floyd as a hero. And yes, the Democrats are going to be fighting for the George Floyd Justice Reform Act or Police Reform Act in Congress, which, by the way, isn't as radical as it sounds. And some of it, I mean, the biggest thing about that particular piece of legislation is a federal ban on chokeholds. I think you can argue that that ought to be decided on the state level. It ought to be decided on the local level. But okay. I think that chokeholds are controversial and they may be somewhat dangerous. But the idea that right now George Floyd is the name you think of when you think of justice. And now we still have the sentencing coming up. And by the way, concerning the George Floyd Police Reform Act, there was a great compromise Police Reform Act that was authored by the black Republican Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina. That justice reform bill, that was filibustered by Democrats to prevent it from passing and being signed into law by President Trump, which is a shame. We'll talk about what Glenn Lowry has to say. It's explosive. Coming up on the Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show. All across America. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, I think it's appropriate to acknowledge some of the real heroes in the black community. And I think that some of those people are people who will speak the truth, even when it's politically incorrect to do so, and will challenge the accepted media narratives of everything. We had on yesterday on the show Professor Wilfred Riley of Kentucky State University, who is an incredibly prolific scholar and a great thinker, talking about these issues. And another individual who's been a friend of the show, he's been on the show many times, is Glenn Lowry, who is a professor at Brown University. He was a tenured professor at Harvard before that. And he now is doing a podcast called The Glenn Show. And Glenn Lowry was talking about some of the positive aspects, and there are some, and the very much not positive aspects of all of the hubbub surrounding the George Floyd, Derek Chauvin case. And this is what he said about one of the particularly the worst, most lamentable aspects of this whole situation, which is mobs around courthouses. This is clip 16A.
Mobs around courthouses are a catastrophe and an affront to all of our rights, including Derek Chauvin's. Mobs around courthouses demanding that defendants be convicted, irrespective of the evidence, because we all saw the video, are contemptible and they deserve to be denounced. The former president of the United States refuses to say the simple words, "Let justice prevail here, it's the jury's call." Refuses to say, "Don't resist the cops and you won't end up in a violent confrontation with them." Instead says, "We have to rethink policing from the ground up." Okay? So the aberrant behavior of a relatively few vicious criminals who end up resisting the police officers and finding themselves in trouble is about to cause this country to descend into riotous and arsonist mayhem. And the organs of responsible journalism refuse to simply say the cops are doing their job and they're mainly in the right. The cops are mainly in the right. No, they're not perfect, but they are also not the problem here.
That's Glenn Lowry of Brown University. He goes on and talks about the threat of mob violence and what that means. Clip B.
God help us. If the jury inside that courthouse doesn't come to the decision that the mob wants, then there are going to be people who will say, of course they're going to loot. There are going to be people who will say, you mean to say black lives don't matter as much as property? There are people who are going to say, of course they will throw projectiles at police officers because they're angry. Some of them are members of the United States Congress, and they're going to say this. So we're in deep doo-doo here, man. This is not just an intellectual cul-de-sac or somehow an ethical or moral mistake. This is political disaster that we're flirting with.
And then Glenn Lowry went on to talk about the root causes of the problem. Listen.
It's not only coming into contact with the police, it's resisting the police. In other words, it's behavior conditional on contacting the police. If you comply with the police directives, you don't get killed. If you don't run, you don't get chased. If you don't resist arrest, you don't have to be restrained. So the conversation is fake at a much deeper level. We are not actually even coming to terms with the ultimate root causes of what's going on, which are ascribed to racism, but which in fact are the vastly disproportionate overrepresentation of African Americans amongst violent criminals and the disease of leading people to believe that they can resist the police officer in those circumstances in which they come into contact with police without consequence.
Okay, the difficulty here is treating that resistance to the police or opposition to the police as heroic, to see that there's something courageous about it rather than profoundly destructive, not just for you as an individual, but for the whole country, for the whole black community as well, of course. And then he talks about the fake narratives that have been promulgated so insistently around this case and so many others. Listen.
Dante Wright is supposed to have been killed because he had an air freshener dangling from his rearview mirror. He's supposed to have been killed because he had a minor warrant outstanding for his arrest for a serious charge. And the implication is we're over-policing. He shouldn't have been pulled over because his tags were expired. This only happens to black people. The cops are patrolling the communities looking to inflict, etc., on black people. It is not just phony, it's a lie. These things are lies. They are intentional distortions. Where is the media? Where is the press? This social justice journalism debases the currency and actually abets the mayhem.
Boy, is that right. And then concluding comment about how this stuff is manhandled by people for their own benefit and mishandled in terms of misleading the public. Listen, Glenn Lauer.
Why a fake conversation? Because the media abet it and flourish in the context of it, and because demagogues have a financial and a political interest in fostering it. Demagogues. Maxine Waters traveled from Washington, D.C. to Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, in order to inspire crowds to resist, 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 because if a police officer isn't convicted, we're going to be mad as hell and we're going to burn this motherfucker down. That's not a quote, but that's what she was doing. A member of Congress. Now, suppose a Republican, pro-Trump person, in the context of a disputed election, had done something similar. We know what the narrative would be. I am unable to find any commentary anywhere in the press, except right-wing sources, critical of Maxine Waters, demagogic incitement of violence.
Okay, you don't have to imagine what the reaction would be. Look, this is a point that Jim Garrity made yesterday in National Review, and it's a profound point, is there's a double standard here. People on the left impeached President Trump because he incited a riot, because he incited violence, because he basically told people lies and urged them to march up to the Capitol building. Now, look what Maxine Waters said. Fortunately, there were no riots last night, at least none that I know of. Things were quiet because they got the verdict that they wanted. But was she not inciting violence? Is it not easy to imagine that there would have, she was speaking in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, that there would have been more destruction there in addition to beyond the destruction that she talked about, where there were stores that were looted and police officers who were attacked and people who were basically harming the community? So if it's a crime for the president of the United States to incite violence, it certainly should be a crime for someone like Maxine Waters. I know she's 82. I know she's congresswoman for life. She's never had a competitive primary, never had a competitive election. It's one of those things that's wrong with our Congress. As too many of those people are locked into districts where you can't possibly have the other side win. But look, just as I think that some of the things that Marjorie Taylor Greene says are unforgivable and censurable, yes, of course it's censurable that Maxine Waters said what she did, and by a mere 4 votes, she escaped censure in the House of Representatives when they voted on that. We will get to more of that. We'll get to more about misusing the Chauvin verdict in school curricula. Already 24 hours, less than 24 hours after the verdict. How, where, we'll talk about it and more coming up on The Medved Show.
This is going to be a little bit provocative.
The Michael Medved Show.
On The Michael Medved Show, in addition to responses of all kinds, ranging from, it seems to me, the brilliant and courageous, as with Glenn Lowry, to the insipid and embarrassing, as with Nancy Pelosi. There was also the Vice President of the United States, the Honorable Kamala Harris, and the President of the United States, Joe Biden. And they spoke last night from the White House. And it followed themes that Joe Biden has used before. And because Kamala Harris is the first person of color to occupy the vice presidency, it seemed at a moment like this that it was appropriate that she speak first. She also spoke very briefly. President Biden spoke for about 10 minutes. Vice President Harris spoke for less than 5 minutes. But she began by citing what is a favorite talking point, certainly for the American mainstream media, at the moment, which is to put the George Floyd, Derek Chauvin verdict into the context of what is called systemic racism. Here is Vice President Harris, clip 9.
This work is long overdue. America has a long history of systemic racism. Black Americans, and black men in particular, have been treated throughout the course of our history as less than human. Black men are fathers and brothers and sons and uncles and grandfathers and friends and neighbors. Their lives must be valued.
Okay, there's no way to disagree with any of that. Does America have a history of systemic racism? Without question. Come on. I mean, it's very obvious. That history has progressively been changing for the better. Going back to the days before emancipation, through the evil days of Jim Crow, to the epic struggles of the civil rights movement. And there has been steady improvement. May this verdict be another step in that process of improvement. But Kamala Harris ended her brief remarks, but obviously very emotional remarks to her, speaking this way. This is a clip 8.
We are all a part of George Floyd's legacy. And our job now is to honor it and to honor him. Thank you.
Okay. See, this is where there's obviously a fine line to walk. But when you talk about George Floyd's legacy, do you think George Floyd that day when he began to get into trouble, when he took meth, obviously that day when he took fentanyl, was trying to comprise a civil rights legacy? A proud legacy. He wasn't. Now, there's every reason to feel for his family, and his family, again, has behaved in a dignified and, it seems to me, constructive manner. This is an interesting story, is that there was a video that the Floyd family took of Joe Biden's call to them. And this was a call right after, before Joe Biden spoke to the country. And apparently you can hear Biden's voice saying in the video, nothing is going to make it all better, but at least God, now there's some justice. We're going to get a lot more done, Biden pledged. He referenced the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act in Congress and added that and a lot more. Okay. Let the lot more actually involve constructive liberation from some of the plagues that really afflict the black community and afflict all American cities and all American populations, but the black community especially. Harris told the family in her comments to the Floyd family that were picked up in this video that was shared by Ben Crump, their lawyer. She said, this is a day of justice in America. We really do believe that with your leadership and the president that we have in the White House, that we're going to make something good come out of this tragedy, okay? Okay. Here was President Biden, again, speaking very emotionally. And there's no way not to see his emotional investment in this if you actually watch the video. But Biden said this about systemic racism again. This is clip 7.
It was a murder in the full light of day, and it ripped the blinders off for the whole world to see the systemic racism the vice president just referred to. The systemic racism is a stain on our nation's soul. The knee on the neck of justice for black Americans. Profound fear and trauma. The pain, the exhaustion. And black and brown Americans experience every single day.
Okay. Many, probably most, black and brown Americans will agree with that. And at least in, I think, one of the most important parts of his speech that hasn't gotten enough attention, Joe Biden directly denounced the idea of responding to these fears and to this injustice with violence. Listen.
Let that be his legacy, a legacy of peace, not violence, of justice. Peaceful expression of that legacy are inevitable and appropriate, but violent protest is not. And there are those who will seek to exploit the raw emotions of the moment, agitators and extremists who have no interest in social justice, who seek to carry out violence, destroy property, fan the flames of hate and division, who do everything in their power to stop this country's march toward racial justice. We can't let them succeed. This is a time for this country to come together, to unite as Americans. There can never be any safe harbor for hate in America.
Okay, I think what's interesting here is that he seemed to talk about violence and extremism on both sides, because he began by saying there can be no excuse for violence, and then, of course, he included the violence of the extreme right that we hear so much about. There's a controversy going on right now, which we will get to in this show, about one of the really horrifying incidents of political violence from the left, from the extreme left, that occurred several years ago. You may remember that when Steve Scalise was severely wounded and members of the Republican baseball team were fired on by a far-left Bernie Sanders supporter. What's fascinating is it's become clear, Representative Brad Wenstrup, who's one of the people who was there at that day, he's a Republican from Ohio, revealed the previously undisclosed determination during a hearing of the House Intelligence Committee that the FBI deemed the congressional baseball field shooting that occurred on June 14th, 2017, a suicide by cop. Now, how is it a suicide by cop when there are clear political associations and clear political purposes that are acknowledged from the left wing that were standing behind that? We will confront that. We'll also confront the idea, how could there be three different guilty verdicts for one crime? The one crime is the death. We now can say the murder of George Floyd, because Derek Chauvin has been convicted of murder of the second degree and murder of the third degree. Murder of the first degree would require intent. These other charges don't. And we'll also talk a little bit about how sentencing is going to unfold and what the big arguments are on appeal for Derek Chauvin. Alan Dershowitz actually thinks the conviction should be turned over, should be overturned on appeal. We will get to why he believes that. And also the entire question of this new shooting that occurred the same day, apparently, as the Chauvin verdict in Columbus, Ohio, with a teenage girl shot by cops. What people do not pay attention to is she was in the midst of doing potentially deadly violence to another girl. The cop may have taken a life, but he also may have saved one. We will get to that incident and much more in this greatest nation on God's green earth.